Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the One Goal U.S. Soccer podcast. This time, we have a special guest, Matthew Hopp from Schalke. He will join us at the end of the podcast for a little quick interview with him. And I do want to thank everyone for their great interest in the Uli Lehner's interview. That looked like it did very well, so I'm very happy to see that. And thanks, everyone, for subscribing, listening, all that good stuff. Please, of course, rate, review, and all of that good stuff as well. I did see a new review, so I'm very happy about that. I forget the person's name, but we got 5 stars, so thanks for that, whoever that was. And George, we'll start how we always start. Buddy, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Lots of good games on TV, USMNT playing in a couple weeks, so a lot to be happy about.
Yeah, let's start right there. Honestly, the big news of the week, we finally got the Wales friendly finalized. We finally have it done. November 12th, 2:45 Eastern. Very excited about that. We'll be watching that. Might miss class a little bit, but you know, I think the first game in, you know, maybe 8 months, is that possible? I think it's a worthy class to skip. Sorry to my teachers if you're listening, but I doubt you are. But anyways, let's quickly recap the Champions League. Kolasinac did score. He looked very good coming off the bench. Giorena was nice today against Zenit. Unfortunately, we did not see Sergiño Dest yet for Barcelona. Weston McKennie got in for Juventus, and he's recovered from COVID, so that's great. And, you know, it's a good time to be a U.S. soccer fan. Everyone's a little upset about guys being on the bench. But, you know, there are guys at top clubs, and I think that's exciting. But let's go back to where we started. The main thing here, we have a game. How excited are you to have a game? Like, are you – what else do I need to say? We really have – we get to watch these guys play. We get to see Giorena in a USA jersey.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting. And obviously, it's going to be European-based players, which I think is absolutely great. Obviously, we love our MLS guys, but the bulk of our roster is playing for top teams in Europe. And these guys always talk about each other. You see in interviews, Giorena's talking about Pulisic, talking about Weston, talking about Tyler Adams. They're always gassing each other up. So to see them on the field together is going to be a sight to behold.
Yeah, I really can't wait. And I think we're going to have new jerseys also. So I've seen those. Those are very nice. I think everyone else has seen them too, but I like them. Anyways, so let's do a little breakdown here. Obviously, we have the Matthew Hopp interview at the end. So we'll try to keep this a little concise. But let's go like group by group. Obviously, when it comes to goalkeeper, the first guy that comes to mind is Zach Steffen, who's obviously in Europe. And we're going to treat this as, okay, all the guys that are coming will be in Europe. Yes, we saw this thing from The Athletic saying that the CBA changed to a 9-day quarantine. But I think logistically it's going to be really tough, and we haven't heard anything yet. I saw something about Jim Curtin kind of alluding to possibly no MLS players going. So for the sake of the conversation, unless something changes, let's assume right now that it's all European guys, okay? So we'll start in goal. Like I said, Zach Steffen, obviously a shoe-in. Ethan Horvath, also a shoe-in. And in that third spot, where do you go there?
For the third spot, I think we've seen Greg Berhalter in the past. He's not afraid to bring in some really young guys to train with the team. The same way we saw Brian Keogh go in and, you know, just train with the team. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see maybe a Damian Lasso or Chituro Adonze, one of those two U17 World Cup goalkeepers playing for Fulham and Leicester respectively. So I wouldn't really be surprised to see one of those guys get in, just get their feet wet, get some experience and be that third body in training.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all. I think also you throw in Damian Loss and Cedar Dos Santos into the mix. I think one of those guys will never be called in. I don't know. They're not going to play, obviously. But just to get one of those guys involved with the system, I think would be a good thing to do. And what other options do we have? Not much, right?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's good to get that guy experience because we might think it doesn't mean much. They're not going to play. But for a young player, when you're 18 years old and you go to a full national team camp, you're playing with Weston McKennie, Christian Pulisic, it means the world to you. So that experience is completely invaluable for them and will go a long way.
I completely agree. Do you want to go center backs next, or do you want to go right back and then left back and then center back?
Let's start at the wing backs. Let's start at our right and left backs.
All right, so we'll go right first. Obviously, the first name, Sergiño Dest, DeAndre Yedlin, Reggie Cannon. That's in no order. I'm not going to claim to rank them right now, but those are the first two that come to mind. Is there anyone else that kind of pushes into that look for you? Maybe a Matthew Olasunde?
I think for Olasunde, he's just coming back from an injury, so not him. Maybe Shaq Moore, but he's been playing more on the wing recently in the Spanish second tier. But I think right now our right back depth chart might be the deepest in our entire pool, so there's not really room to experiment. We have those three guys, Sergiño Dest, Reggie Cannon, DeAndre Yedlin, who honestly for me, yes, Sergiño Dest is starting for Barcelona and Yedlin can't get into the Newcastle team. But for me, those three guys are still very tight in the mix. So I think it'd be good to get all three of them in and kind of just see how they do competing with each other.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. That's one position where I think you kind of got to let the guys battle because like you said, like Sergiño Dest, Obviously, he's the hot prospect. Obviously, he's technically like the best pure player, but we got to see what it looks like for the entire team. You know, he can play on the left, so I think that may open up some things for us. And yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. We haven't a lot of game time to see what will happen. So I think just having them all, like you said, in the camp will open things up and hopefully give us a better chance of just getting some clarity at that position, which I think we definitely need, like you said.
That might be my most exciting battle to see, because obviously with the full national team, you have lots of battles going on between MLS guys and guys in Europe. But that's one position where I think all our top guys are in Europe. So it'd be great to see all of them together.
So let's go to the left back, but I have a question based off of the right backs that we can apply to left backs. So here's what I'm thinking. All right, so we have Anthony Robinson. Obviously, he's coming. And after that, the European left back contingent is not exactly well-versed, you know. So do you think it's possible? Obviously, we might see a Chris Gloucester. I think we could probably assume we might see a Chris Gloucester. But say we move Sergiño Dest to a left back and we classify him as a left back because Kobe Hernandez-Foster, who everyone likes to shoe in as a future left back, is playing as the six now for Wolfsburg. So I'm going to cross him off that list. What say you?
Yeah, so I think obviously Anthony Robinson will be in there. We'll probably see Tim Ream because, yes, right now he technically is a Premier League starter. So there you have a proper left back in Anthony Robinson. You have a player who can play left back from center back like Tim Ream. And then you have a player who can play left back from right back in Sergiño Dest. So now the question becomes, does Greg Berhalter want to call in another true pure left back in? And obviously we don't have our domestic options. So nor George Bello, no Chase Gaspar, no Sam Vines. So maybe Chris Gloucester does get the look, because if he was still in MLS, he'd be getting the opportunities those guys are getting.
Yeah, I think it would might be a good thing to bring Chris Gloucester, and he struggled for playing time with PSV, so I think it might be a good opportunity, similar to a Brian Keogh situation where you bring him in and say, you know, welcome to the environment. The question is, we don't really know about the pure roster size, right? So I think that's where it gets tough, because maybe you have to bring two left backs and two right backs, and that's the most you can bring. I think it's like, what's the maximum size?
Yeah, I think you can bring more than 23. It's a camp. They can bring as many as they want. I'm sure for the friendlies, like they've done in the past, there'll be a specific roster, but I'm sure the training camp will be upwards in the 20s.
Right. Okay, so I see what you're saying. I guess you bring in Chris Gloucester as like a camp invite, but I'm not sure he makes that game day roster, which is fine. It's not the end of the world, but I think he's definitely someone, like we mentioned before, that you want to bring in, give him a look, and just kind of see what happens. But I do think the Sergiño Dest as a left back is kind of an interesting option in terms of like how you figure out the camp roster. But I guess, you know, we'll wait and see and find out. But I think here's the juiciest position in terms of overall depth chart when you include the MLS guys, but we'll cross them off for this time. I think the guys we can shoe in, John Brooks, Chris Richards, Eric Palmer-Brown, Cameron Carter-Vickers. Is there anyone else that stands out to you? I guess also, excuse me for not mentioning Mr. Matt Miazga, who's done very well so far with Anderlecht. So those are my guys. I think that's five guys I mentioned. Is there room for anybody else?
Yeah, so I think Chris Richards, Eric Palmer-Brown, Matt Miazga, John Brooks, Carter Vickers, that's five guys. I think all five of them have shown that they are ready to come in. They're ready to compete for that starting center back spot. So I think those really are the five. Maybe you throw in Owen Otasowi there. If Chris Gloucester is getting an invite, maybe Owen Otasowi gets an invite. Maybe you put him at the six in the camp. Maybe he has a little more freedom in that position, less competition. But in terms of the center back, those are five guys to all want to start for this team. We can assume that John Brooks is penciled in at the left center back spot, but there's just so many people hunting for that starting spot right next to him. So I think similar to right back, this is going to be a huge camp for guys to kind of show Greg Berhalter that they're ready to step in right away.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. There's going to be a lot of, you know, clarity after this camp, I think, and maybe not necessarily clear clarity, if that makes sense, but we're going to get a better idea of what it looks like. And I think that will definitely help. So let's go to the six next. What do you think about that? Is that a good place to start?
You would think European midfield, US has so many players in Europe now, but the midfield, after you go through Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, and then let's say we play Gerrand at the 10, isn't necessarily as deep as you'd want it to be. Well, if you look at the guys below that, it's maybe Alfredo Morales. If you're looking for less established guys, Christian Kappes, Alex Mendez, Richie Ledesma. You have Dwayne Holmes is kind of like in the middle of that. So there's a lot of room in this midfield for players to get called up and get opportunities after that, what we'd assume the starting trio of Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Gio Reyna.
You're really going to diss your man Chris Durkin like that?
Oh, of course. How could I forget Chris Durkin? Obviously, Chris Durkin. I think he's definitely should get called in at the six. He'll probably be the backup to Tyler Adams at this camp. So, 100% Chris Durkin. Never forgot him.
Well, I also want to add two other names. I'm not sure about the travel restrictions. I think this is one of those things where we'll have to wait and see. But I would love to see Johnny Cardoso make an appearance. Again, I don't know about the travel issues, so that might be a challenge. But he's someone that Berhalter wanted to bring in for that March camp that got canceled. Everyone knows that there's a pandemic. And I think, obviously, the one that everyone's kind of thinking about is Jens Kajus, which I believe I pronounced Jens Kajus last time. I believe it's Kajus. So if, Jens, you want to come on and correct me, please do. But I think he's someone that we'll definitely see at least training with the team until that switch is officially filed. We can bring him in and give him a look. So I guess maybe Durkin slots in at that six and behind Adams. But I also think that, you know, if we're going to try to bring in the maximum guys and we can bring in a Cardoso and a Cayuse, unfortunately, I think Durkin might slip his way out. But I would like to bring him in, but I just don't see this place for him.
There's always room. I think you could have 27, 28 guys called up to this camp. There's always room.
All right, fine. We'll have to wait and see. We'll come back next week and we'll talk about it and break it all down there. But let's go. So we have the six there. We have the eight. Weston McKinney, I'll put him as the top guy right there. I think Julian Green is honestly a pencil in at this point because he's performed very well so far in the two Bundesliga. Obviously, I think Alex Mendez was somebody that I'd want to see, but he's injured right now. We don't know the severity of that. So I'd cross him off the list. Dwayne Holmes, like you mentioned. Brian Keogh, maybe a youth guy. Is there anyone else that I'm missing?
I think Brian Keogh, in terms of youth guys, he's somebody that's already championed the national team twice. He's doing decently well in his spell at Wolfsburg now. So I think he's probably a guy who we probably will see in there. Greg Berhalter is familiar with him. Obviously, we're not exactly sure how he did in that January camp this year, but even if he did decent, we'll be sure for him to get a look again.
Yeah, no, actually, I think I saw a report, I think it was last week, about KO actually getting first-team looks with Wolfsburg. So I think that's a good development. I think that's like the kind of player you want to call in. You want to just keep getting him involved with the system because he's a legitimate prospect in his own right. So I think that's someone I would call in. Would you go as deep to call in someone like a Taylor Booth, or is that a little too much?
I would say Taylor Booth, not yet. He's yet to really establish himself with Bayern Munich, too. I think the three Bundesliga isn't necessarily a league that you should be too hard to establish yourself at 20 years old. So I think Taylor Booth within the next year, I think he will establish himself within that team. And then he's probably on that Chris Richards path of, all right, does this guy need a loan move? Does he need a move? How do we fast track him? Because like we say, he's a legitimate prospect.
All right. So here becomes the juiciest position. Well, I don't think it's that juicy in terms of rankings, but Giorena, center attacking mid. I'm going to put him there. You're okay putting him there. But after him, how do we do it? Do we go Richie Ledesma, who's been all right so far with PSV? You know, he actually made the bench for them in the Europa League a couple times. Hasn't had that debut yet, but I guess maybe we put pencil him in just because of the scarcity at the position. But
I think right now the U.S. has shown a precedent for calling in guys who are prospects, not necessarily because they've had an extensive time with their team's first team. So I think Richie Ledesma has definitely done enough to garner a call-up, and I do see him getting his, you know, first cap. Maybe Luca De La Torre, he's been in the team in the past. He could go in there. Julian Green, we mentioned, he'll probably slot in at the 10 if and when he does get called up. So I think there's a couple guys in that entire area, and I think the good thing of the U.S. is that there's so many guys whose positions are fluid, who can play at the A, who can play at the 10, who can play on the wing. So it depends.
What do you think about the USL playoffs being over and Jose Gallegos not have anything to do right now? Would you try to get him over there, or is that not worth the whole shebang?
I just don't see it happening. I don't necessarily see if it is necessary to call Jose Gallegos in. I think he's probably doing well with his little time off, training well. Maybe he has a move on the cards. We'll find out a little bit. I just don't see that happening. I don't think it's necessary.
All right, fine. Fair enough. We'll cut it off for now. I just don't know. The 10 position is kind of tough. I think Dwayne Holmes probably gets a call because he kind of fits that mold. But I'm interested to see kind of how we play. Maybe we just change the formation up a little bit. But it'll be interesting, definitely. So now it becomes a pretty easy position. Left wing. We'll start, of course, Christian Pulisic, the left winger, not the right winger, Frank Lampard, you hear me? After him, Conrad De La Fuente, maybe. I think Tim Weah, probably. Unfortunately, the injury to Jonathan Amon crosses him off the list. What about maybe Indiana Vasilev, Joe Efford, any of those guys do anything for you?
I really do like Indiana Vasilev, and not necessarily left wing, but I think he's a Swiss Army knife of a player. We've seen him in the past play left wing, right wing, striker, as a 10, as an 8. I even remember when he played with the U-17s, he played as a left back a little bit. So in a camp where, you know, numbers can be limited, you want a player who can play multiple positions, who is a young player who's not going to get offended if you say, hey, can you play left back in this drill? Hey, can you play as an 8 in this drill? Can you play as a striker in this drill? Because sometimes with established players, you do that and they kind of ask, why am I here? Why are you not putting me in my position? So I think if you have a young, eager player who goes in and is going to be just happy to be in every training session, no matter where he gets put, and is versatile like Indiana Vasilev, that's very useful. So yes, he's playing in League One right now. He is starting for Burton Albion. He's not at Aston Villa trying to push for first team minutes like we have hoped. But I think I really would call him in. And I think another name, too, is Tyler Boyd. He's one who hasn't had the clearest of club careers. He started off really hot for the national team. We thought, oh, my God, like, this guy's going to be amazing. And then he kind of died down in the Gold Cup knockout rounds. But he's another person who I think brings a different dimension. He has some pace to him. He showed in the past he can, you know, crack a shot on target. So I'd like to see Tyler Boyd again. And I think he's really hoping to get back in and trying to change people's opinions once again.
Yeah, I think Tyler Boyd is someone. I'm a known non-Tyler Boyd fan, which is okay. I prefer Tyler Boyd on the Bengals. He's a little bit better, but besides the point. Anyways, yeah, I think Tyler Boyd's someone you kind of have to bring in based on his club situation. He actually like wasn't registered by Besiktas for this like season because they only have a certain amount of like international players available. And so he's kind of been frozen out until January, which is not a great look for him. So I think this camp would be a good opportunity for him to get some game time and to obviously get with the boys. So I think obviously he's not like a super hype name anymore, but like you said, just, you know, bring him in, see what you have, see if it's really all just stardust at this point, or if there's anything, you know, that's there we should kind of really go for. So I don't know if that's a definitive answer, but you know, I think he's someone that you could probably talk me into looking at. But let's go to right wing now. I actually have Tyler Boyd on the right wing, so I think if we're talking right wing, he's probably in there. But we had our guest last week, Uli Lanez. Would you put him in there right away?
Yeah, I think for me, the wings are interchangeable. Left wing, right wing, it's all the same. Obviously, we want Christian Pulisic on the left wing. He is our main man, so he gets first pick, so he gets to go on the left wing. But all our other wingers, I'm fine with them on either side. So there doesn't necessarily need to be a differentiation between left and right wing. So Uli Lanez, I think he definitely gets a call up again. It's similar to Brian Cahill, where he's already been there, but he actually played and he scored. And obviously, we talked to him last week, and he's hungry. He wants to go in. He wants to do well. He wants to be there. So I think, once again, the same way you can never have those young guys who, you know, are just happy to go in and play anywhere. You also want young guys who, you know, want, as you said, they want all the smoke right now. And we spend 30 minutes with them. Uli Lanez wants all the smoke. So definitely call him in, and I'm excited to see what he does.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, I think. The only thing I would push back on is he hasn't really settled his club situation yet. Obviously, he came in during the week in the KNVB Cup, and he was fine. You know, he's been a decent player. I'm not going to say anything bad about him. Obviously, we love him here. But he hasn't yet to really fully establish himself, so I wonder if it's the case of you leave him at home to give him a better chance to fully break in with Jurrien Veen. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but I look at his current form and it doesn't stand out that he's doing extremely well, but I will say that yes, he is playing. So I think that counts, but it could also be used as argument against him. I'm not sure.
I think you get him in. You get him into the team. Simple as that. And yes, maybe if he stays back, he gets some more training, he gets some closer look to the coaching staff. But at the end of the day, the national team, when they're determining who gets picked, they're thinking about the national team. They want to see Uli Lanez with these guys. When Uli Lanez played in the January camp, he wasn't playing with Christian Pulisic. He wasn't playing with Gio Reyna. He wasn't playing with Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie. So I'm sure Uli Lanez wants to play with those guys. Obviously, he wants to establish himself at Jurrien Veen too, and I don't want to put words into his mouth, but he wants to link up with these top guys and go toe to them with training and show Greg Berhalter that I'm not a B-team guy, and this is a great opportunity for him to show that.
All right, so I'm going to give you three names here, okay? So we have Tyler Boyd. We'll already include him. I think we can include Tim Weah. Obviously, his club situation is also not the prettiest right now, but I think it's important for him that he gets game time, and I don't know. I think just the best way to do that is to be with the U.S. national team. If you're going to include Uli, I think for the same reason you include Weah. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think Tim Weah, he's another no-brainer for me. Once again, it's the same Uli Lannis conundrum. Do you leave him at Lille so he can prove to the coaching staff he deserves to play more? But once again, this is about Greg Berhalter and his national team. He wants to bring in the best possible guys he has, and Tim Weah is one of them. If Will can see his worth, I'm sure Greg Berhalter will see his worth, and he'll put him in, and he's the guy that needs to be in that camp.
Just a couple other interesting names maybe we could touch on. Lyndon Gooch, Cameron Harper at Celtic, and then Emmanuel Sabi. Do any of those guys come to mind as possible players that could make the camp as well?
I think maybe out of those three, I'd say the most likely is Emmanuel Sabi. He's a guy who, if he was an MLS, he'd have been called up to probably the past two January camps. And we haven't really seen him because when it comes to that European window, it's a lot more stacked, I guess you could say. So I would like to see Emmanuel Sabi. I think he brings a different kind of look to the U.S. national team, that very direct pace he has. He's also a pretty good finisher when he gets in front of goal. In terms of Lyndon Gooch, I think he's doing well for Sunderland, but he's just above the level of League One, and it's not a case of Indiana Vasilev where he's at the beginning of his career. So I would like to see Lyndon Gooch kind of test himself. I'm sure he's somebody who wants to test himself as well. So I think out of those guys, it's Emmanuel Sabi for me who I would most like to see.
We'll wrap up with striker, obviously Josh Sargent, the shoe-in. After that, maybe Andrei Novakovic sneaks his way in there. Maybe Nicholas Giochini, who's someone I really like personally. And I think the Iceman, Aaron Johansson, probably gets in. You think maybe Johan Gomez, who's done well for Porto B, gets in? Or any guys, like, maybe you can even include Cam Harper in that list?
I think it's Josh Sargent is a lock. I'd say Sebastian Soto's a lock. And it becomes a question of, do you bring in four players who can only play striker, or do you bring in three strikers and then you have, you know, a Tim Weah who can also slot in there? Then you also have Giochini who can play on the wing, so maybe he guts in because he's versatile. So I'd say in terms of the players who only play striker, Josh Sargent and Sebastian Soto are the locks. And so I'd say Aaron Johansson is the next man in. Maybe he gets called in. I think his form deserves to get called in. And then you have, like I said, you have Giochini, who has also played on the wing. So maybe that plays in his favor to get called in. So me personally, I call all four of them in. Josh Sargent, we need to see him lead the line. He is our striker of the future. We want to see him scoring goals to the national team again. Sebastian Soto, we're trying to secure him from Chile. So get him in. Hopefully he gets on the field, scores a goal, sees how exciting it is to score for the U.S. and never looks back. And then Aaron Johansson just came back out of nowhere. Been so unlucky at injury trouble. So it's absolutely great to see him scoring again. And why not give him a look in the national team? Because we have so many young guys, and adding an experienced player to any pool is a great thing. If you look at attackers, so if we're thinking about how many attackers you're bringing in, you have Christian Pulisic, who's the lock, Josh Sargent, who's a lock, probably Sebastian Soto, I'd say at this point, is a lock. That's three. So then you add in Conrad, that's four. Uli Lannis, five. And then maybe you round it out with Giochini and Aaron Johansson. And I believe did I say Tim Weah?
You did not say Tim Weah. See, that's the problem.
I did not say Tim Weah. So that's eight Tyler names Boyd. Right there.
Okay, so then, but then Tyler Boyd's out, right? I mean, that's fine.
Possibly.
Okay.
That's the thing. We can't eat our cake and have it. So Tyler Boyd and Emmanuel Sabi, maybe they don't get called in. So it's just one of those things where there's so many names. There's so many different combinations you can have. How many strikers do I bring in? How many wingers do I bring in? And so that's why I bring up a player like Indiana Vasilev, because if you're bringing in a certain amount of strikers and, you know, you need somebody who can, is going to have to play center mid one drill and they're not going to care, you have Indiana Vasilev because, you know, he's played at that level. I mean, that's why you have a guy like that there exactly for this issue where you have so many guys who play similar positions and want to kind of focus on that.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I really hope Giochini is someone that gets the call. I really like him. I've been watching him a lot this year in the second division of France. So I think he's someone that – I think he's a try-nat, so a little try-nat panic. I don't know how you feel about this one, but Haji Wright's been kind of tearing it up in the Danish league. I mean, I guess maybe if we're not going to call in Johansson, you don't have room for him. You probably don't have room for Haji Wright. But I think – he's just someone I'm happy to see doing well.
I absolutely love it. Every time I go on the weekend, I see Haji Wright is scoring. He's a guy who was highly rated, sometimes in the same breath as Christian Pulisic during that U17 cycle. I'm very excited to see him.
But I think in terms of upcoming U.S. soccer prospects, that maybe if there was a January camp, the January camp equivalent of an all-European camp, right? Maybe Matthew Hopp sneaks in. So I think this is a good opportunity for us to kind of switch gears and bring in Matthew Hopp, who's definitely not been shy about his ambitions. He wants to represent the U.S. at the highest level, Schalke as well. And I think he was a really good interview. It was nice talking to him, just hearing about his life growing up in Southern California, playing at the Barca Academy with Caden Clark, Julian Araujo, and Bryce Duke. So just, I think without further ado, we should play that interview with Matthew Hopp. My first question is, you're a product of Strikers in California, but you made your name at Barca Academy. How did that move to Arizona come about?
So my dad, he found out about the new team opening up in Arizona, Barca Academy. And then he let me know about it. And then he saw it as an opportunity to be part of something new and saw it as a way to get good exposure, especially with the link between them and the Barcelona themselves, La Masia. So I went over there, and it was funny because during the tryout, they started off 11v11 for the first training there, and I was supposed to be on the bench, and then they had the lineups all on the wall, and then they had someone at striker, and then they didn't show up, or I don't know where they were, so then they put me at striker, and then from there on, the coach saw potential in me, and he wanted me on the team as a striker. So that was my first year playing striker.
And the rest was history.
Yeah. So there's obviously a little bit of a learning curve there, but once I got the hang of it and figured out the system, I was able to become one of the top goal scorers in the nation that year.
In terms of like the tactical difference, did you notice anything in terms of like how Barca Academy was kind of going through their training? Did you feel like it was a more professional environment or anything?
It was a very professional environment, but yeah, obviously their tactics and their style of play, they like to dominate the game. So every game was the same thing, and we went into every game, I guess, with the same plan to keep the ball and to play attacking football and create opportunities and try and destroy every team and get as many goals as we can, you know?
Any point, were you considering going to an MLS academy? Because obviously at that time, Barca Academy was very new. It was a sort of unknown. So did you see maybe going to an MLS club as a step instead?
It was always an option because they obviously, it's good to play against players that are older than you, bigger than you, and more experienced than you. But I think that when I had this opportunity in Europe, it just made complete sense for me, you know.
Between like you, Caden Clark, Bryce Duke, Julian Araujo, in only 3 years, like Barca Academy is showing like a huge thing for producing pro players. Like, what was it about that environment that you think like gave you an edge when it came to like being in a next professional environment?
Just the facility itself, you're able to be surrounded by soccer 24/7. You're able to have access to a gym to improve there. You're able to have access to amazing fields, you know, and over there your sole focus is on soccer, you know. You don't have as many other things to do, I guess, because you're in the middle of the desert, you know.
Yeah, and obviously you're at one goal. We love all our young players, we love shouting them out. So we mentioned all those things that came from Barca Academy. So which players currently at Barca Academy, or maybe even some guys you played who are in college now, do you think we should keep an eye on for?
Well, that's hard because there's a lot of good players that are currently in the system right now and a lot of good players that came out of it, especially from my team. You know, that team was a really strong team. But I guess some younger players you could look out for are Brooklyn Reigns. He was in Spain with me. We spent almost 2 weeks together over there. There's a whole bunch of young players over there.
But, you know, talking about your career to this point also, you committed to San Diego State, actually, and then you got your move to Schalke. Before that move to Schalke, was there any other teams that kind of came in late or in the mix?
Well, first off, San Diego State is a great school, you know. They got great coaches. I love them, you know. But obviously, my agent, Manuel Bond from Bond MG, he was able to give me a lot of options, and I was able to figure out which club was best to me. And obviously I came out to Schalke, and they're an incredible club with one of the best youth academies in the world. So I saw it as a no-brainer, you know.
And definitely, you say it's a no-brainer. Did Schalke's history of Americans help with this?
Yeah, it helped a lot. Yeah, I was able to know that they trust the young Americans, and they're willing to play them if they're good enough, you know. And that, and they're also one of the best youth academies and top Bundesliga team.
You talk about that youth academy. Going from the DA to now playing in Germany, what was the biggest difference? Like getting off the plane, was it the environment? Like tactically, what struck you first when you were there?
Yeah, it was the tactics. You know, having to switch up your tactics every game based on the team you're playing, having to play new formations, having to adjust your game, all that stuff is difficult. Along with the players are a lot more, I think, physical out here. A lot more. They fight a lot harder, you know.
Did you feel like you had to work on the physical aspects of your game? Like, have you been in the gym more recently because of that?
Yeah, I think just because, like, the age I am right now, like, you have to be hitting the gym more. You don't want to be hitting as much when you're, like, 14, 15, you know. But, yeah, I've been hitting the gym more. I've been trying to put on some more weight so I could, you know, keep up with these guys.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you say you're, you know, trying to put on more weight, keep up with these guys. You're making the progression now to U23s. So you said it was a learning curve originally, now an even bigger jump. What's that been like?
After the U19s, I had a four-month time at home where I was able to, because of the coronavirus, you know, there I was able to work out and train 2-3 times a day every day. Hit the gym every day, and I was able to work hard. So that initial step from the U19s to U23s wasn't that difficult because I was able to have a lot of time to prepare for it.
Do you ever get any advice from like Weston or Nick about your move? And have they ever like talked to you about some advice for the club in general?
Yeah, when I talked to Weston, I was there with him and my trainer at the time, Norbert, and he brought us both together, and then he said, do you have any advice to give him? He just said, you just have to fight, you know. They love that here. The people in Gelsenkirchen, they love the fight. They love hard working, and if you have that, then you know, it brings the team alive. You're able to just fight every game, you know. It's not going to be an easy game when you play Schalke, you know, when they always have the fight.
You've been in Germany for over a year now. You've had all these new experiences. You talk about your advice from Weston. And then this summer, we saw a new young American, Evan Rotundo, come to Schalke. So I'm sure you've talked to him. After you're here there, what have you kind of passed on to him?
Yeah, I see Evan in German lessons. We hung out a few times. I like to mess around with him. I like to joke around. But just any advice I give him is just to, like, fight. And I guess nothing is earned. You have to take it and just keep developing, but also enjoy yourself along the process, you know.
That seems like pretty good advice. In terms of, like, there's a bunch of Americans now pushing it in Germany. Are there any that you kind of talk to or see on the regular?
I see Nick on the regular. You know, we get Indian food often.
Is there a good Indian food spot in Germany?
Yeah, there's a spot near where we both live, so we go there pretty often. But I talk to him, and then the other Americans I played against, you know, we became friends. We follow each other on Instagram, you know, just keep up like that. But I don't talk to them like every day, you know. And I see Evan pretty often, maybe sometimes at German lessons, but sometimes we have training when he's there.
Yeah, you talk about playing against those other players. We see some of these guys, they've been playing with each other in the youth national team since they were 13, 14 years old. And you're sort of a newcomer in that setup. So the U20 World Cup coming up, you know, you have your sort of eye on that. So how's that going for you in terms of the national team aspect?
Yeah, the U20 World Cup is obviously something that I'm working hard to be a part of. You know, I want to do something, you know, with my country and trying to win it. You know, it'd be cool to do that. But getting back to the first part of the question, like, I grew up playing against with a lot of these guys, so they're not like it's not anything new to me. You know, I know a lot of these guys already, and train with them sometimes. I played against them growing up, so it's nothing new.
That's good. I'm glad there's a good sense of community. I know Anthony Hudson has talked about how he's like spoke with a lot of the young players during quarantine. Were you part of that?
Yeah, I was a part of that. He had a group chat and he did some games, some bonding exercises to still keep us all together throughout the tough time of the coronavirus where we weren't able to get together. But yeah, we had some good times and some banter with each other, and it also brought some of us closer, because I live in Southern California, and that's where a few of the other players live. So I was able to meet up with them throughout the time and train with them, get a few sessions with them. So that was also good too. That is Southern California. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you claim you're Belinda is Southern California. I mean, I guess, but I feel like it's kind of inland. You know, I don't know if that. I guess it's Southern California.
It's just south and north. There's no east or west to
it. All right, fine. We'll allow it. But I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like when I say Southern California, I feel like you kind of live inland, you know? I don't know.
No, Southern California is like LA and below, and then Northern California. No, yeah. Northern California is like San Francisco and above.
All right. We'll allow it. I'll agree with you. That's fine. Okay. But I'm curious, you know, so one thing Zach Steffen mentioned in the past was like this idea of not much of a culture with U.S. soccer. In your experience, like with the U team, do you feel like there's a concentrated effort to kind of create a culture?
Yeah, I mean, from at least what I've seen, like they've been trying to do something and trying to bring all the guys together, you know, create a culture for themselves. And I think that's what all the players are trying to do. And they're trying to make the U.S. You know, a big competitor in international football.
Yeah, so I guess you talk about all this, and I'm sure with you, it was great to, you know, meet up with those guys, have your Zoom chats with Anthony Hudson, but just how excited are you to get back on the field? And once you're back on the field wearing the national team colors, what are your next goals?
It would be an honor to wear those colors, and obviously my long-term goals are to represent my club and country at the highest level. But you have to take short-term steps, you know, first. So I think right now it'd be to cement a starting spot on the team and to get a goal and assist in every game I'm playing, you know, make an impact in every game. And then through doing all the little things right, then you'll get your final goal, you know.
You know, one thing we like to ask on the podcast is, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And obviously you're pretty young into your career. So in terms of this time next year, like, what are your goals in terms of just for club? Like, where do you see yourself?
Obviously, like I said before, I want to represent my club and country at the highest level possible. And I want to do it as fast as possible, you know, trying to get up there and show not only the club and Germany, but the whole world that I can do.
So we have a fun question that we always ask is, what's like your go-to song on your pregame playlist?
Okay, my go-to song is a song by Kanye West called Hold My Liquor. That one just gets me pumped. I don't know why.
It gets you going. You're in, and when you hear it, you're ready to go.
Yeah, when you hear it and you just put on your AirPods and you feel it, then it gets me going.
Like for you, when you play with Schalke, how do you kind of see yourself as a striker? Like, who do you compare yourself to?
I like to compare myself to Harry Kane. You know, not just staying high, but staying deeper and creating for others as well. You know, if the game is you know, going too slow, I'm not getting any opportunities from others. You know, I got to create for myself, and I like to get on the ball and the past is necessary going forward, you know?
Well, I think that's all of our questions. George, do you have anything else here?
Yeah, I'm just excited. I think, you know, you're one of those players that the ceiling's just so high. We haven't really seen the best of you yet. There's so much yet to come. So, you know, we're just excited to have you on, and we're excited to see where you go from here.
Yeah, I'm excited to be on here too.
Yeah, I want to thank you for joining us. I know it's kind of, you know, right on the precipice of like something big for you, and I think we're here before it happens on the big time. So remember us when you make it big time, and be happy to have you come back on anytime.
Yeah, I'm happy to come on here anytime you guys want.
Well, that will wrap up the interview with Matthew Hopp. I do want to thank him and his agent for their time, and I want to stress the importance of how excited we are for this game against Wales. George, any final thoughts before you wrap up?
Yeah, I think Matthew Hopp this week, Uli Lanez last week, so many young, ambitious guys in the talent pool, and it's just great to see, and it's only going to help our national team. I can't wait to see who does get called in, and the guys who don't get called in are going to have that chip on their shoulder. So, hey, if Hodgie doesn't get called in, I expect him to keep up his goal-scoring rate, so I'm excited for that.
All right, that'll be it for this episode of the One Goal Soccer Podcast. Again, please rate, review, and subscribe, and all that good stuff. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget, check out that Ulila interview from last week, Eric Palmer-Brown from the week before, and again, Matthew Hopp from this week. So thanks, everyone, for their help, and we'll be back this time next week.